This is a Deese World production in association with Pants Pending Studios.
Is this just a situation where you're going to cut a bunch of our blurbs out of context?
No, because then there would be blisters in awkward places, which would be terrible.
Oh, here we go. That is the dirtiest thing I've ever seen.
Listen to The Nerd with Adam, Will, and Amanda.
Why did I get top billing? I don't deserve top billing.
Because out of the two of us, you're the one she likes better.
Aw, man. I mean, yeah.
I'm 8 months pregnant. Put another one in me.
And that's when she figured out that I had taken drugs.
How are all of you? We're going to do a promo, but we're just going to talk sex.
I got to see your dick.
Aw, man. I mean, yeah.
She cooked dinner for me in lingerie, which hopefully she doesn't listen to this. I don't know if I'm supposed to say that.
This podcast phenomenon is sweeping the nation, and we're all up on the bandwagon with the plethora of episodes at nerd.pantspending.com.
Willem Dafoe gives me a lady boner.
Blue Chew is bullshit, by the way.
Listen to The Nerd. It's not the worst thing that can happen to you. Is that a good no? It takes effort to do a promo.
Yeah.
And I think we knew that before.
Although I feel like we could just put that part in.
Yeah.
That along with the nerdy thing Adam said and me with the sexy voice. There you go. There's your promo, Will. Congratulations.
The Nerd. I'm sorry.
You are now listening to The Social Hour.
They're not PC, so if occasional foul language turns you off, then you have all been warned. This is the calm before the storm.
I can't afford anything to drink. I'm going to smoke my weed outside. I'm going to come back to stage. Can somebody give me a ride?
Get ready for the social hour.
Live from Deese World Studios in Spokane, Washington, this is the Social Hour. On today's show, comedian and author of the book Fuck Your Darlings, Devin Devine. And now your host. He wouldn't be fucked because he's nobody's darling, Deese Casillas.
Malib Keen, everyone, welcome to the show. This is the Social Hour. I am Deese. Thank you for another episode that you are arriving to. That was said 100% succinctly. Thanks guys for coming around. We have a great episode. Good friend of mine returning to the show. So glad I get to talk to her. Love her to death. Devin Devine, author, comedian, more, poet, super talented. I'm so glad every time I get to see her and talk to her. So, she will be on momentarily, to tell us all about, the new book, Fuck Your Darlings. It's coming out, it's out now. And all kinds of stuff. So stick around for that. Before we get into that, guys, before we talk to Devin, real quickly, November 4th, mark it on your calendars. The announcement has been made. The new show, Some Imperfections Podcast. Myself, Abby Buckenberger, Sierra Cossi of I Am Alliance. IAmAlliance.com, but the company I Am, they are life coaches and more. We are bringing you a brand new bi-weekly show where we're going to be giving you life advice, answering your questions. You'll be able to call in, text us, message us, hit us up on Yelp, People Finder, Google Maps, whatever you got, you can find us, and we will be giving you life advice. Theirs will be more practical than mine, probably, but I'm still going to chime in. It's going to be a great show. We're very excited, and it's going to be an awesome time. You're going to find it. It's going to be every other Wednesday at Deese Comedy, so make sure you support that and listen. I can't tell you enough how exciting it's going to be, guys. We're going to be able to give you all the answer your questions and really help you with life. And I'll put a comedic spin on it. Well, they do give you things that may actually help you. Well, I just talk shit, but it's going to be fun. Also, guys, the Social Minute every Monday. You guys have been great at supporting that. I appreciate that. It's growing more and more every week. It's a fun show to do, so I'm happy that you guys are digging it and giving in a great positive response. And as always, go to Patreon.com/PantsPending. Check out all the shows on the network. There's stuff happening. We've got some new shows, Kaiju Coffee Breaks, Trading Pages, and potentially some more coming. So keep an eye out for that. Also, the new show that I am executive producing and will be guesting on soon, We Are Not the Same, with Lacey Joseph and Heather Gardner. You heard them on here the other week, so keep an ear out for that. All right, everyone, that's it for me. Well, not for me. You're going to keep hearing from me, but no more fucking, none of this go buy this or hear this. Whatever. Hear what you're listening to now with your ear holes as we talk to my good friend, Devin Devine. All right. I am here with my friend and someone I've missed, and I'm glad to see you, Devin. Devin Devine, author, comedian, poet, and just all around great person. How you doing? Good to see you.
Yeah. Hi, Deez.
I missed you. I've been thinking about you a lot recently. I'm glad to get to, like, I realized it's been months and I didn't really talk to you much. And I'm like, God, I also haven't talked to hardly anyone, it seems like. So,
no, I think people that are like very well connected with everyone in their life are really scary right now. Like, how are you? Like, people that are like doing better than they've ever done.
Yeah. Right, like thriving. I found that I thrive. I was talking to a buddy of mine the other day, and I didn't talk to him in a little bit either. He's like, "Hey, how you doing, man?" I'm like, honestly, better than ever. I think it's not shocking that I would thrive in an apocalypse situation. That's like ideal for me. Like, okay, complete chaos and the world's collapsing. Sounds great. Yeah, this is good. This is my live, laugh, love time.
Yeah. So. Hashtag blessed in quarantine.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, I somehow got busier and started enjoying it more, but just busier in different ways, I guess. So,
well, and like, never mind the fact that like anyone that got unemployment and managed to like, you know, be patient enough with the unemployment application process.
Yeah.
And that $600 extra a week was like, this is the best money I've ever made.
Yeah, I'm balling. Yeah, just went straight up everyone's nose, I think, probably. Yeah. Just like, hookers and blow for days. This is on the government. Thanks, Trump. Yeah.
I mean, that's one thing I'm glad I'm sober is that, like, I didn't spend any money on drugs or alcohol. And instead, got a little, like, I would say, like, I moved into a new apartment back in July, and it's my first time ever living alone, and I, like, have moved probably, like, 6 or 7 times in the last, like, 3 years.
Yeah.
And, like, slowly over the last 2 years, like, have, like when I moved to Portland, I came here in a car, like a Volkswagen Rabbit. I had a Volkswagen Rabbit worth of belongings. And so coming in and, like, being like, oh, I'm in an apartment. Oh, I don't own a table.
Right. Yeah. Where do I put things? Just on the floor, I guess, is where.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, like, I got, like, I would say the first couple weeks I was in this apartment, like, I got, like, a little manic about, like, let's go to Target. Let's go to Fred Meyer. Let's go back to Goodwill.
Yeah, you just have to try, you know, especially in your new place and trying to figure out what kind of the direction things are going. Yeah, you're just trying to, like, mm-hmm. fill in pieces and be like, okay. Well, and I think a lot of people had that same experience too during the pandemic, just like a lot of free time, some extra money, and just like, what do we do with this?
Home Depot and Lowe's are killing it this year.
Right?
Like, their stocks have to be doing so good. They're like, this is the year for home projects.
Yeah.
We're gonna buy a bunch of PVC pipes and then not know what to do with them.
Worst case scenario, in the incoming revolution, you can make pipe bombs. So, it's on its way. You'd be surprised. I actually bought a dining table, and you know me, I've never had furniture. So, yeah, I got a dining table. Yeah.
Wait, is there anything in your living room though?
A film studio. I got a green screen and my lights and my camera all set up. That's just my film studio now.
Okay, so it's a useful space.
It's
now.
Full, yeah. It's full of just I'll lighting, green screen in my desk where I film my show and other stuff. So that's a permanent structure.
Your house was the type of house where you're like, oh, that smiling neighbor that you wave at every day. The second you go inside his house, you think something's wrong.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. there's people chained to a radiator in that basement.
Oh, yeah. Not into the radiator, just like in the dining room.
Yeah. I still say, I mean, you've been to my house, you know where I live. I always think my neighbors must assume I run a trap house
absolutely.
Yeah, I'm just like this, compared to them, young-ish guy who has like this giant pit bull and like people come and go from my house. Like I have like 7 people that have keys to my house and just come and go all the time. And I'm rarely home or, you know, in and out. Like I'll have rental cars for a couple days, like just go in. They're like, what the hell is going on? They, you know, this was a nice neighborhood. And then this guy comes along, just hanging out.
Comes in from Montana.
Yeah.
And SoCal.
Right.
In our clean streets of Spokane.
I know. It's just such a... I feel bad because my neighbors are super nice, but they're also super old and they're always home. Yep. And they...
Oh, yeah. And that's the thing with Spokane's housing is like... Everything suburban-ish in Spokane. So I would say, like, you leave downtown and you just, like, you leave that, like, 2-mile radius from downtown.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, either people in their, like, 20s, by Gonzaga, or, like, people in their 70s.
Right.
And I feel like what's going to happen is, like, all those people in their, like, 70s and 80s, in the next, like, decade when they die... Their kids are probably living like in Seattle,
yeah,
and like don't want to like own a house in Spokane. So like in like a decade, I feel like all these fucking old people are gonna die in Spokane. Well, maybe sooner. Depending on if they believe in masks or not. Yeah.
I mean, if you go to North Idaho, they don't. So.
Oh my God! I know. I just visited my mom in North Idaho, and it's. Lawless.
Oh yeah, I've been doing shows in Idaho, and they still got freedom in Jesus, Devin. There's no COVID. It doesn't exist.
COVID doesn't exist. Except, did you see? I mean, Trump has it now.
Oh God, I know.
Or Trump, quote unquote,
yeah,
is tested positive.
You know, I tend to believe because here's why he doesn't want to admit being soft. So this is like an acknowledgement of being like, you know, soft in a sense to him. And also, I don't think there's anyone that was undecided on which way they were voting. Like the debates were just pomp and circumstance at this point. There's no way. I mean, no one was watching that and being like, oh, maybe I will vote for Trump, you know, or maybe I will. I mean, they were like, I think everyone's pretty set on where. where they're voting.
And the thing is I don't know how, but people that are like in the like Trump tunnel vision,
yeah,
really, he could say anything at this
point. Yeah,
anything he could say. He could say like, yeah, I think I am pro-choice,
right?
And they'd be like, you know, he's a complicated man.
Yeah. Right. The mental gymnastics of that people have to go through daily really is what I struggle with the most. It's, you know, I can wrap my head around kind of being ignorant and following someone like that. I can wrap my head around. I don't agree with it, but like I can understand it. But like the mental gymnastics and the intellectually intellectual dishonesty you have to go through every day to like perpetuate it is insane.
But I think for me, I can no longer write it off as like lack of education or knowledge or ignorance, because he has done enough in the last 4 years and like continues to like escalate.
Yeah.
Where he has lost supporters. Like there are, sure. I think, pretty quickly and I would say continually, like right wing conservative.
Well, you have generals to high all, when all your joint chiefs of staff, the generals, you have,
like, there are people who are like, oh, he has taken this over. Like this isn't what I signed up for. Like there definitely are, but I don't know, like at the same time, it's just like, and maybe it's because my living here in Portland, which right. Portland is this like sort of like almost mocked liberal epicenter.
Yeah.
Like, you know, progressive, but also just like very white. Oregon historically is like pretty fucking, has like a really like awful racist history that yeah. I knew very little about before moving here. And then like the rest of the state, like even just like an hour outside of Portland is like so conservative.
Yeah, it gets very, very country, very like very in the sticks quickly.
Yes. And it kind of, I mean, it reminds me of like all the voting maps, like when Nadine won.
Oh, yeah.
And like when you looked at the voting maps, like within a few miles of downtown was all blue, and then you could just get to the like suburbs and out right. like out of the county. Red.
Yeah, just yeah, Deer Park and Clayton and all, you know, all that stuff becomes very, it's very different landscape quickly.
Yeah. Which I'm like, I don't know. I think for a long time people would try to say like I would say myself included, like I would write off like conservative family members as like maybe being uneducated or maybe being ignorant, or, and like the thing is like there are also plenty of quote unquote like uneducated people who like who know better.
Yeah.
Have like, I think at this point to support Trump is like deciding against like a global scoped moral compass.
Well, I
if
think
you're like seeing a moral compass and being like, no.
Yeah, people have kind of, I think people have just gotten so divided that they're like, once they say they're in a camp, moving the needle at all shows some sort of weakness or defeat. And it's just like, we can't move at all, because if I move an inch, then that's an inch you've gained.
Well, and that's the thing with like, and I think it kind of ties into like cancel culture even too, of like, we don't want to forgive people for having wrong beliefs,
right.
or like being misinformed or being wrong. Like, we don't want to forgive people for that, whereas like I would love to offer forgiveness to anyone who spent the last 4 years supporting Trump,
yeah,
who maybe now is realizing like, oh, I've done so many wrongs and I don't know what it looks like to right this path. And I think that comes down to like ego, you know. Capitalism feeds the individual ego,
sure.
or whatever. now we sound like a Joe Rogan podcast.
Well, I mean, that's not wrong. It's a weird thing. The cancel culture is interesting because there's obviously people that deserve to be canceled. That's a thing that happens. But it has gone to an extreme where, yeah, it's like this one thing you did forever ago now makes you wish to the cornfield forever and there's no chance for redemption. And I think that's where we've really gone sideways, especially with, we look back on history through the prism of today and want to correct things with today's temperature. And that's really an impossible thing to do because, like, yeah. You know, I was talking to someone who does a podcast called shout out to Paris, who does a podcast called Aged Like Milk, where she takes old films that aged poorly talks about, you know, how, you know, like Mickey Rooney and Breakfast at Tiffany's, things like that, yeah. You know, like very, you know, obvious. And one of the first things, you know, the impetus for her podcast was the film Dumbo, the original, you know, cartoon. And, you know, I mean, there's like, there's a crow named Jim Crow and like, you know, obvious stuff. And it's like, we talked about how they edited that out for new, you know, the new versions of that film. Yeah. And I'm like, I don't think they should edit that out. Like, I know that, like, we have to build, we have to understand that it's wrong, but we have to be able to look at that and be like, that was wrong. But like editing it out doesn't make it go away. We have to be able to like understand that
instead there has to be a system in place where like Disney no longer makes if so like say Dumbo continues to exist as the original cut.
Yeah.
Disney should no longer make money off of an enterprise.
That's an interesting, yeah.
Like I think that's to me like I think this like I always tie into like the argument with comedians and arts and artists is like separating the art from the artist.
Yeah.
It's like, and I don't even really want to open this can of worms, but like separating comedians that maybe have done really terrible things.
Yeah.
People, and like separating the art from the artist is like a great way in my mind to do that is like that person gets to be that talented artist or performer, comedian, whatever, but they should no longer make money off of it.
Sure.
Like a form of reparations or whatever.
Yeah. So like you're that. Saying I can still play, I can still bang Ignition, but R. Kelly's not making any mailbox money off,
money off
anymore.
Of it. like I kind of think of it as like I think the like one of the ones that's really pivotal to me, like what like a pivotal change I've seen in like my communities is like J.K. Rowling has like
oh yeah okay
continually doubled down
right
and being transphobic and like to the point where like her new novel that she wrote is like a murderer pretending to be a woman
yeah
like. It's so fucked up.
It's like she's just like trying at this point to find a way to fuck with it's like just doubling down.
Oh, I'm transphobic. I should appeal to my transphobic audience.
Right. Yeah.
which like I guess maybe an eight like some agent told her that and she was like, okay.
Yeah. someone just trying to tank her career. It's like, listen, yeah. JK, here's what you need to do.
But you know, the thing that I have seen a lot of people say is like, now we have this information. It doesn't mean you can't enjoy the books. It just means you shouldn't spend money on them.
Yeah.
So no longer buying the movies, no longer buying the books, not buying like direct merchandise and instead buy, you know, like checking the books out from the library, but you know, buying them from a used bookstore.
Yeah.
Like, things like that where like the creator, the originator, the perpetrator of that harm is no longer benefiting.
Yeah.
But you get to still consume the art, which like, I don't know, maybe it's harder to think of that as being possible in a time where like everything's streaming. So like,
oh, true. Yeah.
Yeah. But like, I have like a couple of like Woody Allen DVDs
uh-huh.
where I'm like, yeah, a decade ago, I guess I technically gave Woody Allen money, but like, I'm still going to watch those movies. I still own the DVD.
Yeah.
I didn't know anything about anything when I was 18 and I sure didn't know that Woody Allen was dating his daughter.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's such a weird, well, it's just funny how, I mean, I'm glad that at least people are starting to come to kind of that realization that you're saying of like at least supporting people. Cause I remember, God, I don't remember what it was recently. Something happened in, one of the Me Too type things. And like, you know, one of those things that was like, someone was getting accused and we're like, and like, it was one of those open secrets where everyone's like, yeah, we all knew that. Hollywood just was fine with covering it up because that person still made them money or whatever, yeah. You know, which is very all too common. And, yeah. I use the example of Roman Polanski, where I'm like, yeah. I'm like, Roman Polanski won an Oscar like 8 years ago. Okay, he raped a girl in a hot tub in like 1969, and then fled the country, and we've been giving him Oscars ever since, and no one is like, you, Hollywood, you sanctimonious pieces of shit, act like now you're all high and mighty. It's like, you don't give a shit as long as the person can still make you some money or some notoriety, or like, well, you, it's,
and I find the reckonings that happen, I don't know, like I don't know if they're effective, like all the shit that just went down with Chris D'Elia,
yeah,
which like I can just say, you know, sometimes when you see it and you're like, you see some celebrity and you're like, I
yeah, like, yeah, right. No, that for sure. Yeah.
Like, maybe it's just from,
yeah, like that one tracks. I don't, I'm not, you know.
So like, I remember, and like, I say that from like a personal anecdote of like, I think it was soon when the Spokane Comedy Club had like recently opened, that first year.
Yeah.
I like went to a Chris D'Elia show and like helped with seating or something. And I think it was because someone was hosting that I like one of our, you know, one of the people in Spokane was hosting, and sure. I wanted to eat. And I know I would have been with, I probably was with Tony, and we afterwards, everybody went to Zola's. Which is like, first of all, maybe the mistake, but we went to Zola's. And then I remember like Chris D'Elia and like his like squad,
yeah,
walked in.
Right.
And I remember just seeing him and walking through like a super crowded Zola's on a Friday night. And then like, I swear to God, it was something like, you know, those like little private rooms.
Yeah.
They'd like reserved one. And like went into like one of those like little private rooms and then like shut a door.
Right. And
and it was truly just like watching like a wave of like basic Zola bitches, yeah, which we love. But you know who you are.
Right.
You
yeah. Okay.
And like just seeing them be like,
yeah.
And like truly just being like, he looks like a rat.
Yeah. but they're all about, it's that, you know, you get a little bit of juice. All it takes is a little bit of juice to, you know, goes a long way. And I definitely agree that, yeah, he's one of those guys where when you hear about it, it seems, you're like, yeah, that makes
well,
sense.
Well, it was like, there was one of the clips, like that maybe this is like laughing and hanging back into our millennials not understanding technology as much as we should. There's like a clip of him being told that like Snapchats can be saved.
Oh yeah, yeah. I've seen that. like
what?
Yeah, that little moment of realization, like, oh, I've made a grave mistake. Maybe this isn't as great as I thought it was. Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it's just because fame doesn't really appeal to me and like hasn't for like a while. Like notoriety, I guess, doesn't appeal to me, but like I'm not gonna be shocked or upset if like 2 years further down my career someone is like, hey, your nudes leaked. I'd be like, yeah, I've been leaking them for a while.
Yeah, they're connected to my bank account. They're...
Yeah, I know.
it's a weird thing because like with the whole retroactive kind of what, you know, as you get, you know, now with everything is, you know, technology is ubiquitous and people have platforms, yeah, and people put things out there. And like, I don't know if you're aware, I'm running for mayor of Spokane.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Cool. I've like seen it. I didn't know you're really running from there.
Yes. And people are like, are you worried? You know? And I'm like, listen, I go, I have said and done horrible things. I get it. Like, for sure. Was any of it with intent to actually harm people? No, never malicious. But, like, I'm a comic. I fucking talk hours on a podcast. Sometimes you just say dumb shit that you don't mean. I'm like, but also, I'm like, super transparent about it. And like, I think at the end of the day, people know who I am and what I am and, you know, where my heart is. And I'm like, I'm not, I want that transparency. And I also, you know, like the idea that like, you know, I've had opinions that have changed and shifted because of like, you know, things that have happened. The, like I always talk about how, you know, when I was a kid, the term calling something gay or retarded, very common, and not, and it wasn't meant with hate or anything. It was just what, you know, saying that, you know, when we grew up, that was, it was saying that meant different things. And it, like, eventually you're like, oh, I probably shouldn't say that in those contexts anymore. And like, it's not a hard shift.
No. And I think, 2020, maybe as like a catch-all, like people just saying like 2020 is the year I learned this, this, and this, or whatever. And like 2020, we no longer can stand for this, this, and this.
Yeah.
And I think what maybe at large we have realized is that like the biggest thing we can attempt is harm reduction.
Yeah.
And like in the sense of like the mistakes we make and the choices we make is like trying to hurt and harm others less.
Right.
Like like accepting the fact that like I likely will harm others in my life. Like choices I make have repercussions.
Sure.
And like I am not incapable of hurting others. Like I can't claim that. I think acknowledging that like the people we are today is not the people we were last year, most certainly.
Yeah.
And I think we don't really allow a lot of room for growth. Like I still remember like being a kid when the first being young when the first Iron Man came out,
mm-hmm.
and like everyone was like, but is Robert Downey Jr. gonna be able to put aside his like past addictive lifestyle? And then like made a fucking to-do over it. And like, and that's the thing is like we really like fucking the United States, maybe in the world, but like really want people to like atone for their mistakes for their lifetime. Like that's why the prison system other than like you know, extremely racist beginnings.
Yeah.
And reinforcing.
There was a rough, you know, a couple of years out there we, you know.
But I definitely think like growth and potential for change are things that like tie back to like how today we should say things like abolish the police and abolish prisons, abolish the like the worst parts of yourself, but realize that like that type of growth doesn't happen overnight. Maybe just because I work a program of recovery, but like spiritual change is never like you wake up and you're a different person. Like you wake up for months and do something a little bit each day to like apologize for your past and work towards a different self in the future.
Yeah.
And like that model doesn't exist on a grand scope. I think you'd be a fucking great mayor.
Well, thank you. I'm working on it. I'm grassroots. I've got a lot of people behind me, so it's coming along.
How are you handling your relationship with the Spokane Police Department? I know that you've had a few graceful Facebook callouts.
They're not big fans of mine. They're very aware who I am, and they're not big fans. Especially I've made it clear that if I win my first order of business is to make them actually report to the ombudsman, which they refuse to do, which is crazy because we voted on it. They still don't. And I, you know, a department that has nothing to hide shouldn't feel like they don't need to report. You know, we're the fifth deadliest police force in the nation in the 100th largest city. That's disgusting. That's a disgusting disparity. So that's number one. Then the homeless issue that's being, you know, dealt with as a criminal issue and needs to be dealt with as a mental health crisis as it is.
Here in Poland. Yeah. I mean, I actually have, having the, like, moving out of Spokane to Portland and having, the homeless issues here be just as bad.
Yeah.
If not at times, I feel like just feeling like, I don't understand how this is so bad here.
Yeah.
And then maybe it's because I traveled a lot more at this point in my life than I did before I left Spokane, like initially, but like there are so many parts of the country where like homelessness is not a visible issue.
Yeah.
Like, to the point where like, I wonder what it's like for someone to come to Spokane and be like, good God.
Sure.
Like, what happened?
Yeah.
And I don't know. And it's one of those things where like, especially with coronavirus is like, how insane it is that like people are supposed to stay at home and these stay at home orders. And you have hotels and businesses that are completely empty. People are not traveling and staying in these places. And I don't know. I think that it's crazy to me at this point. Like, I think I just saw in the news today that the founder of like two of Salt Lake City's first gay bars, the man who founded those two, died at 82 in a homeless shelter.
Yeah,
and it's things like that of like the scope at which we dehumanize people. Whether like you were saying, like lack of resources to mental health, or just physical health resources and being houseless.
Yeah.
Is truly one of the worst experiences.
Yeah. And I've been working with a couple homeless outreach programs in Spokane and the Homeless Coalition and the police deal with them in a meeting the other day. The police just going through and round up, basically throw away all their shit. Tell them, you know, they enforce sit and lie where they have to move. And then they usually round up, throw away all their shit. Or what they do is they've been doing this thing now where they take their stuff and it's held at an undisclosed location. And if the person wants to find it, they can call the police station and have it tracked down. It's like, these are homeless people that don't have a phone. The library is closed right now. They don't have access to phone or internet, things like that. It's like, how do you expect them to call? And like, you've just taken, I mean, when you take all their stuff too, like they may have their birth certificate or social security number card, if they have it with them, if they're lucky enough to fortunate enough to have it still, you know, that you're taking all that stuff and all their resources that they actually have. And it's really, really, my level of bullshit I'm willing to take has gone to negative in the last year, and I've been on one.
Do you know much about with the homeless centers in Spokane right now, like what they're doing as far as COVID precautions, or
They're limiting the number of beds. So there's about 1,300 homeless people in Spokane. There's only enough beds for about, oh gosh, I think it's like 30% of them. And part of the problem is, besides the, because Nadine in the city shut down a warming center in Brown's Addition on Cannon, which was actually the best one in town. They were really doing a great job. Then they handed it over to the Guardians, who shit through like four times the amount of money and then screwed everyone over and dipped out. The people they had working for them were very abusive to the homeless people. The Salvation Army just opened a center that I can think can hold about with COVID precautions, about 60 people. The main problem is most of the homeless shelters in Spokane are religious based. So they exclude, they don't let you in if you're gay or trans or you're not sober, or if you're a couple, a homeless couple that's unmarried, they separate them, things like that. It's really terrible. So those are the type of things that are just, I mean, the barrier to entry, it's like we should just have the barrier to just get these people in shelter and then figure out the details later. Like, that's the biggest thing, is getting them off the streets, getting them food and shelter, figure out the sobriety and stuff later. Like, that is something that can come, but you gotta just get them off, get them some food and shelter, and get them surviving first.
In Portland, a little bit more so than Spokane, I think there's just maybe more people here in support, like in support of the populations that are houseless here.
Sure.
To like, there's like a couple of on ramps where people just like get to be set up.
Yeah.
And here in Oregon, a thing that I actually really love is Oregon's a lot better about our recycling laws. Okay. And there's taxes at every grocery store if you buy bottles and cans. And so we in Oregon have a lot, or maybe it's not Oregon, maybe it's Portland specific, but there's centers where you can take your cans, and your cans, you get like 10 cents a can. And so there's a couple of spots in Portland where, you know, you see these like kind of like mini houseless villages.
Yeah.
Like 10 set up, and they'll have like a spot where you can like drop off cans and bottles. And like, I've started, I live in an apartment complex with like 20 apartments, and I've started putting like all my cans and bottles in one recycling bag to place by the recycling dumpster. Just because then it's like easier access for someone that's like, I could use this as a resource.
Instead of diving through it and trying to sort it out.
I mean, but Portland is also like a city where you'll like, you don't have to be houseless to be diving through the trash. I don't know how in the last, so like more so than I think I've ever seen, Portland just like puts stuff on the curb. And it's kind of this like symbiotic, like it will go.
Yeah.
Like you'll drive
back to nature.
To nature, or someone who's like, I'll refurbish that IKEA chair with three legs.
Sure. And, yeah.
Speaking of my recycling, the dumpster's outside. They're outside being, oh, they're going to be so loud for a second. And maybe it's loud to me, but it's not loud to you. But like, I've like picked up like tables on the side, like end tables on the side of the road. I have a really nice lamp in my living room.
Yeah.
It was just like at the end of someone's driveway. You know, I think people in Portland too, when it comes to the houseless population, are like pretty willing to like redistribute like food and snacks.
Yeah.
And like, there are a lot of like water drop-offs and like, you know, the like little library company.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, there's an organization in Portland now. I'm not going to be able to think of it off the top of my head, but what they've started doing is also food libraries, like food sharing.
Yeah.
And that's really fucking incredible, where it's like, I think there's 8 in Portland where it's like a cupboard section that has dry goods, and then a refrigerator that has like meats and cheeses. And like, you know, like sometimes you're like, well, I don't know why that, like, in what way would that be helpful to someone that's houseless? It's like, well, some of these people that are houseless have a camping stove.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, yeah, for sure.
And are like trying to make this sustainable living.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting to see it be, I don't know, calling it successful feels like a
right. Yeah, I mean, it
but
is
like because it's not successful. They shouldn't have to be houseless, period. But to also see these pockets where, like, people are being undisturbed,
right,
and like, are, you know, able to, like, live to the means that they can.
Kind of make the best out of a bad situation without, you know, the man, I guess, just breaking it up and, like, you know, trying to find a reason to.
Yeah, whereas, like, in Spokane, I feel like there's that, like, immediate, like the ordinances downtown, like, we don't, people don't want to see it.
Yeah. Right.
Whereas, like, I think in Portland, at least, and maybe it's, like, my neighborhood, but, like, there's just, like, sort of this, like, accepting of, like, we're going to see it because it's a reality.
Right.
Whereas, like, you know, Nadine wants to, like, God, maybe it wasn't Nadine, but do you remember when they passed that huge, they were, like, going to put a bunch of rocks under the
pit? Yeah, $150,000 worth of rocks. Which, by the way, if you're going to put rocks under the freeway, we live in the fucking Rocky Mountains. Don't buy them, you idiots. Like, just, what are you buying fucking rocks off Sky Mall? Like, just go, just go get some.
We
bulk rocks, man. Most of that was shipping cost, I feel like. I do remember that.
They were making sure that, like, their cousin who owns a rock
quarry, some rock quarry or something.
Rock quarry was getting his cut.
Yeah, Gino. I got a cousin Gino. He's got the best, biggest rocks.
He's got a limestone quarry.
Yeah, we'd be losing money not to. End of the year clearance sale on all the flint you can get.
Okay, as far as, like, apocalypse goes, I just learned how, and this is so embarrassing. You know the fucking trick with matches where you fold the match packet and then you can pull the match and light it that way?
Uh-huh.
I just learned how to do that a couple months ago.
Wait. How are you lighting matches prior to this, Devin?
I would take the match out of the pack and then try to strike it against the back. I've had very little success ever.
How did no one ever, like, try to be like Devin?
I don't know.
Like, she's a strong, independent person. She can, you know, she's gonna be fine.
And so, but then I was, like, telling someone, I was like, yeah, I learned how to use matches, so I feel like I'm gonna make it through the apocalypse.
Definitely. That's,
and
they're, it.
Like, Kevin, how many matches are in a matchbook? And I was like, I don't know. And they're like, what happens when you run out of matches? And I was like, I need to learn how to use flint.
Do I strike the flint against the back of this matchbook? Is that how?
Except I did rewatch what's that fucking movie? I'm not gonna be able to think of the name of it, but I know you will. Leonardo DiCaprio and Tom Hardy. When Leo crawls inside the horse.
The Revenant.
The Revenant. I did rewatch that recently and feel like. I'm like, yeah, I can do this.
Yeah, I got that. I can take a bear.
No, I think at one point he, like, crawls out of a river.
Yeah.
And then, like, sitting there lighting, like, he has, like, gunpowder, and he, like, puts the gunpowder on some, like, brush and lights it.
Right.
And also puts gunpowder in, like, one of his neck and then lights it to sear it.
Right.
I was just watching that, like, okay, no, I die early.
Yeah, that can't be sanitary. You didn't wash your hands before you did that, Leo.
There's a really good moment in that where, like, I wish I was better at, like, screen caps for, like, making memes, but there's, like, they're, like, eating bison or something, and it's just, like, blood truly all across their faces. And I just wanted to put, like, when you earn your red wings. Yeah.
Like, it was rough back in the day. It was way rougher. So they.
Yeah. Oh, I absolutely think people would probably go from eating bison to, like, eating out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
During someone's period. Like, yeah, woohoo.
Let's do this. Yeah. It just means it's ripe.
It's peach season.
Yeah, right. Yeah, this is the time. Get them while it's hot.
I do feel like one of the ways I'm trying to level up is like my, I like gardened this summer.
Okay.
Like was living in a place where I had a garden, and I feel pretty determined now to like have that be a thing I am capable of, because like, first of all, we shouldn't be dependent on underpaid migrant workers for our produce.
Sure.
That is just like the base level, like, you know, that shouldn't be the only place you're getting your produce from.
Yeah.
Like I don't eat a lot of fruit. I just like didn't grow up eating fruit. Fruit was like a thing for the bourgeoisie.
Right. Yeah. How exotic.
Like, fresh fruit. And like, so I didn't really grow up eating fruit, and I have a hard time buying fruit because essentially if you don't eat it within a day or two of buying it, the state of it changes.
Right. There's a lot of pressure to eat it.
There's a lot of like, you got to eat that, except for apples. Apples you can have for a while,
yeah.
But like a lot of like the soft fruits, you know, like you have like a couple of days.
It's a very small window.
Yeah. And I think that's also a crazy thing for me to think about with grocery shopping is like,
yeah, what am I going to want to eat in 4 days? That's, yeah. That's like,
well, and then I grew up like a grocery trip was like, I and like, this is probably because like I grew up with a single mom. So there was probably food stamps where like the grocery trips were like very frugal.
Yeah. Sure.
And very planned and very like, what, like these 7 boxes of hamburger helper means we eat dinner this week.
Yeah.
You know, like, whereas like, I know now there's so much like people like go grocery shopping every 2 days or fucking whatever. And that's, or like they, even worse, I don't know why, but I hate the like delivery dinner recipe boxes.
Oh yeah, like let's pay $50 for a meal for two that just comes to my house and stuff. Yeah, it just seems really,
it's like 45 or 50 bucks a week and you get like 3 recipes and it's like 2 servings. And I got like I got a box from a friend probably sometime last year because she like accidentally ordered 2. And so, like, I, like, had a box of the stuff, and I, like, made it, and I was like, okay. And, like, following recipes is also a thing I hate doing. I, like, am very much, like, an improviser in the kitchen. And, like, because of being in the service industry, I'm, like, I've also been in kitchens a lot and, like, have a good instinct for how to fucking make something. So having, like, a recipe that I'm supposed to follow, like, step by step by step feels, like, a little fucking weird.
Right.
But it's also so wasteful. There's so much plastic. Everything's like individually.
Oh,
packed.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
And then like, and I just have a hard time with it too, because it's supposed to be this thing to like, for the people with a busy schedule and like, so you don't have to go out and grocery shop or like think of what you're going to eat. And it's just so weird. Like it's the layers of like very specific privilege to it seems so wild.
I mean, it's overpriced, like you said. There's lots of waste. There's so much. It's a lot of convenience. But I think there's something too, like I've actually rediscovered cooking. I love cooking, and I just didn't have time a lot. I ate out a lot more than anything. And I've, in this time of COVID, I've like rediscovered, like I've spent a ton of time cooking. I'm like, oh god, it's like cathartic to me. It's like therapy, cooking, actually. And I think there's something about like, all right, this is what I'm going to make. I go to the grocery store. I buy this stuff. You know, I spend the time cooking it. And like, it's so rewarding.
What are your go-tos? What are you cooking?
Well, I cook a lot of Mexican food, of course.
Yeah.
Tons of different types of tacos. And I mean, I go a lot of carnitas, different stuff like that. But I love, I love cooking a good steak and veggies, like a veggie medley type thing. I do love my veggies. I'm on like a no sugar, no grain diet. So,
How is that?
Actually, it's good. I've been doing it for a while. And it's pretty easy. I mean, I'll break it every now and then. I'll have a little bit of carbs, like something, you know, like some pizza or something. But for the most part, it's no sugar. I mean, it's easy because I don't drink anymore. I never was a soda drinker. I never had a sweet tooth. So like sugars is easy. The grain thing can be tougher.
Are you like caving with like soda waters? Are you on the soda water train yet?
I drink a shit ton of soda water. Yeah. That was the huge, that one actually was like, I think that was super helpful for me to quit drinking originally, because I drink a ton of it still. But it's, yeah, I mean, I'll have like, seriously, like probably six or more of them a day.
Yeah. I would say in the last like 6 or 7 months, finally got on the like LaCroix, Polar, you know, like the canned soda water.
Yeah.
Train. I caught the train finally. You know? It's helpful. And like,
yeah.
I had a couple of weeks back in early quarantine when I was in Spokane working on the house where I was drinking a lot of, oh God, a lot of Mountain Dew. Mm. Like anytime I'm like really upset emotionally, there's either upset emotionally or on a really long road trip and it's like late at night, like I go back, I like revert to like a 12-year-old self.
It's like a comfort thing.
But like I was drinking a lot of soda, and then like had a roommate who was like really into soda water back in May. And then like since then I've been like, I am a soda water person. Someone's like coming, like, you know, they're like, hey, I'm going to come over. And I'm like, bring soda water. Yeah. We're going to meet Mark. Bring soda water.
We're going to party. I'll tell you what. I found these things. They're soda water, but they have caffeine in them. That's one of them. There's these other ones that they sell at Safeway called Cascades. They're like in 16-ounce cans, and there's 160 milligrams of caffeine in them. It's literally just, I mean, it's just soda water. It's just it's just like carbonated tea.
Have you had a highball yet?
Yeah. I've had those too.
Highballs are in all of mini marts. They're like the 7-Elevens and Plaid pantries over here in Portland.
Yeah.
And highballs were a game changer.
Right.
Yeah.
It makes such a, if I can hydrate and get caffeine, I over caffeinate and I drink a lot of, so basically I pee a lot is what I'm trying to say.
Last night, just for like a moment of view of such full transparency, I do some shibari and have in the last year, like the rope tying. It'd been like 10 months since I'd been tied, and my really good friend like texted me last night at like 5:30 and was like, do you want to do a tie tonight? And I was like, holy shit, we haven't tied since 2019.
Yeah.
I'd love to. And I like ended up going over there and like was masked to it and like did a tie and everything. And then like at one point we went to do like a transition where I was going to be inverted. So my like, my lower half of my body was going to be higher and then my head was going to be dropped.
Yeah.
And started to do that. And I think it was either like the pressure point of like where the rope was on my waist. But like the second my head dropped, I swear to God, I had this like, oh, I'm about to piss down my body. Like I thought like, and I peed like right before we did the tie. I peed with like, and like had been drinking a lot of water because you want to make sure you're hydrated. It's a pretty like intense body experience.
Yeah.
So you want to be fed and hydrated and not sore or sick. And I was like, oh, no. And my friend like lifted me back up and pulled my upper half of my body up and was like, oh, is that painful? And I was like, no, I thought I was going to pee.
Yeah, that's it. When you're like tied up and then peeing on yourself, like this is not necessarily the experience I wanted, but
it's not necessarily an experience that I'll probably never have, if I'm honest. But like, I want to go into that experience knowing it's gonna happen.
Yeah, yeah, by choice, consent, personal consent of what my body's doing.
At least the tarp down, like my friend had a really nice new rug.
Right,
under.
Yeah, just.
Yeah, I mean, it's 2020. Piss plays part of life.
Yeah, it's fine. But yeah, you do want to be, you do want to have, yeah, some prepper, at least, you know, yesterday's newspaper or something. So we haven't even gotten to the book yet. I want to get to the book here, but also I do want to ask you, we talked about the homeless issue in Portland.
Yeah.
I do want to talk to you about, you know, you live in Portland and everything that's been going on with, you know, the protests and things like that. What's that been, you know, boots on the ground for you? Obviously, we see what the media is portraying to us, but what's it really like from someone who lives there?
The protests are downtown. They're by the Justice Center. Portland's layout of the city, pretty similar to Spokane. Like, if you don't live downtown, you probably don't go through downtown.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
If you live in North Portland, you, like, it's really rare. Or if you live in North Portland or North Spokane, you, it's like the instances to take you downtown would be like a very specific restaurant or bar.
Yeah.
Well, there's a pandemic, and so like the instances of things that would take me downtown are like nearly eradicated. Like in my last year, downtown Portland, the only thing that's in downtown that I regularly go to is Powell's bookstore, the main Powell's.
Yeah.
And there was like a poetry venue used to be downtown at this theater called the Armory, and like those are essentially the only like really instances that I've been downtown, and like the train station's downtown, and so like there's a few things that I've been to downtown Portland for, but like very far and few between. As far as like what it is like, I can't speak to it. I went to protests in like early on, I want to say like the very first week after George Floyd died. Yeah. I went to protest. And if I'm honest, I didn't handle it well mentally. As far as like anxiety and being around that many people and not feeling informed enough about how to operate in that space.
Sure.
Like there was just like many, many, many levels of like, I don't feel prepared or like I am benefiting this space. And like a thing I really tried to analyze is like not wanting to be performative in efforts I have, and not wanting to overcompensate or put myself in a position where like I'm actually like compromising a situation by not being prepared for it.
Yeah.
And like I have tried to make up for it in other ways. Like I do a decent amount of like financial redistribution, if possible. I had a lot of unemployment benefits come in. I tried to like redistribute that the best that I could. And I don't know, and try to pass the word on. I definitely have like good friends and people I care for that like are boots on the ground and are there as much as possible. And, you know, I have friends who have been, shot up on the daily with tear gas.
Yeah.
And who like felt sick for days because of tear gas, and who, you know, made these giant like 5x5 like, or these 5 foot tall like plexiglass guards to so they couldn't get shot with the rubber bullets. Like I have good friends who have been harmed in this process,
right?
And trying to be like supportive of those people, doing what I can for those like those friends. And I don't know, it kind of feels like there is probably going to be a day that I will feel prepared enough to go. But like one of my good friends, you know, just admitted to me like they didn't go out last weekend. We had a really big Proud Boy rally here, and they're like, yeah, I didn't go out that weekend because A, I don't have a bulletproof vest. and they were like, and I'm not good in one-on-one combat. So like that's also the level of someone who like has been like, that's someone who's been protesting a lot, who is admitting like, I don't have a bulletproof vest.
Yeah, they kind of like, know what to expect.
Like that's for protest, someone who's protesting to say like, the reason why I'm not going to go out and protest is because I'm not prepared for one-on-one combat. Like for someone to admit that means like that's the level of danger and risk of this. And like,
so has it been that you know, as I guess wild as the media is making it sound in Portland then? Oh, it's my dog.
Your dog. One second.
Yeah.
I'm going to go.
My dog is there. I miss Maya. Oh, look, there she is. Hi, Maya. Hi, Maya. Oh, cute. She looks like she's got some extra fur on her, or she got some fluff.
She's pretty fluffy right now.
Yeah.
I took her to the groomer this summer and truly spent money on a groomer that it's offensive that I paid money to like the worst fucking great clips of dog groomers. And so yes, to tie back now that my dog is truly distracted. I just actually was explaining this to my grandmother recently that like the thing that's really interesting is, and this ties back to like technology and access to technology. Mm-hmm. It's like I here living in Portland, I probably have, I'm going to say 50 people I follow on Instagram who were going to protest regularly. And then additionally, I probably during like May and June and July followed like an additional 20 different Instagrams to be more informed on what was happening, because there were a lot of people on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter doing live feeds while protesting.
Yeah.
Live video while protesting. And the thing that's really fascinating is like that footage isn't what's going to end up on the news ever.
Oh,
like,
sure.
You know, like the like journalists doing things on Twitter, like doing live feeds on their Instagrams and Twitter, like that's not what's going to end up on the news. And I was trying to explain to my grandmother, like, she's not going to see the photos where people are like going home and like taking a photo of the welts and bruises on their leg from getting shot with a rubber bullet. And it's things like that where like I definitely think it is violent. When they called in the guard, I think probably about a month or two ago. Time doesn't make sense.
I know, right? It doesn't exist anymore.
I'm like, when was that? I think so back when that happened, I definitely would say like violence being incited here is like not like it is not protesters being absurd. Like there's been like I think 3 or 4 different times our mayor, who is like not on good terms with the city, Ted Wheeler, there's been so many times that he's like banned the Portland Police Department from using tear gas because they started tear gassing protests and that was like the moment that incited violence or repercussions.
Yeah.
You know, like, and there's like a whole group of people that are I'm trying to get the right phrasing for this, people with uteruses protesting. They're trying to gather data from people because they're trying to do a study because it affects menstrual cycles in a fucked up way.
Yeah.
And so they're trying now to like, if you've been affected, like it's causing people who like are like to have like spontaneous menstrual cycles, have more intense menstrual cycles, and like is causing physical pain and repercussion, to where I think they're trying to build a case to sue the city.
That would be interesting. I mean, it's like literally something that we can't use in international warfare because of the Geneva Convention, but they can use it in the, you know, on American soil against citizens who are protesting against.
I don't know if you saw like back there was like the Wall of Moms they did for a while here.
Yeah.
And then it was like the wall of moms, the wall of dads, and then they had like the wall of
Veterans. I think the wall of veterans. Yeah.
There was a nurses and doctors, and like they tear gassed every night that week. You know, like it, there's not. And that's the thing that I'm really trying to learn too, is like the way, like they have this specific image they try to show that like who protesters are. And a thing in Portland that I, though it may feel like a little bit like a, like shouting into the void, regularly in the city, you'll like drive up to a street corner and there's just like a group of like, I don't know, I want to say like a dozen older, like 50s to 70s, like white people, like old men and old women,
yeah,
like Breonna Taylor signs and Black Lives Matter. And like to have it be like it, the protesting, yes, is downtown. A thing that like caused chills down my entire spine is I was on a walk one night with a friend, and there was a driving protest that was like 15 minutes long of cars, where like they go from one end of Portland through suburb streets to the other side of Portland.
Wow.
And this like kind of like parade of like, and like of honking, like blaring on their horns, honking cars,
yeah.
You know, people hanging out of the cars, protest, like with protest signs, you know, cars being painted, Black Lives Matter. And like, my friend and I were on a walk, and we stopped and we watched for like 10, 15 minutes, and it like gave me chills.
Right.
Mostly just because like, I think we have, there's obviously a vision and an idea of what protesting is and can be, and like boots on the ground being the phrase here. Like there is that version.
Yeah.
But like the resources I've seen where like, revolution doesn't have, revolutions don't have one type of,
oh yeah,
like one type of person that required. And like that's something I'm really trying to like, I don't want shame and guilt to be a thing that I keeps me from shame and guilt and like lack of, like I was saying, like lack of feeling prepared being something that always keeps me stuck in inaction.
Yeah.
Definitely. Also, I'm trying to think about the ways in which, like, so what is my part in the revolution, yeah, today? Like, what?
Well, it takes all kinds, you know. It, yeah, takes all. It's not a one size fits all, and there, you know, there's multiple different avenues and ways people can help and participate.
Yeah, and I think too, like, I think there is something I have to admit that, like, I am also someone that has the, who is deciding not to go. Like, and there are people who like the decision didn't even cross their mind.
Sure.
Like there are people, and I really want to like, try to do as much as I can to like people, there are people of color protesting who like, it's not like they're going despite their dangers automatically and systematically being higher than mine ever will.
Yeah.
You know, like, and that's something I have to acknowledge, is that like people are truly putting their lives at risk in a way that I am not. And like, I don't know what that, like me deciding on self-preservation and like deciding not to feel shame for it is also me trying to like make up for that in other ways.
Sure.
You know, I think 2020, the thing kind of being is like, we do what we can to survive.
Yeah.
You know, like, and not feeling guilty that we do what we can to survive.
Yeah. I mean, it's wild times and everyone's kind of, you know, playing their part and doing what they can. No, you know, not everyone can be there every day, all day or at all. And that's fine. There's, yeah, nothing, you know, no one should feel guilt or shame about that. I think it's, you know, even those people on a suburban corner with, you know, a couple old people on a suburban corner making their voices heard is just, you know, just as important in a sense. Yeah. It's kind of the spirit of what's happening. You know, and there's a lot of, you know, conflicted. I've gone rounds with people on this and confliction about, you know, the amount of property damage or violence that could be happening through these things. And I'm like, you know, I go, you got to understand, I go, first of all, the Revolutionary War wasn't won through peaceful protest. And, yeah, and also these people, when you're talking about communities that have been underserved and unheard for literally 400 years now, and at a certain point, you know, the peaceful protesting don't work. You have to, I mean, I lived in L.A., and my neighborhood was on fire during the L.A. riots. Like, I grew up in that shit, and I'm like, you, at a certain point, you have to do something so extreme that people can't turn a blind eye anymore. They have to at least look at it and see it and address it and see what's happening.
The property damage is just never, like, to me, that doesn't, like, I don't even see the argument of, like, how that matters at all.
Yeah.
Like, because buildings and sidewalks and windows truly are such replaceable things.
Sure,
like,
right.
Gentrification can prove that easily. Like, yeah, we replace sidewalks and houses and buildings and windows all the time. Yeah,
almost every day.
Almost every day. We wipe out entire neighborhoods and then build
a Walmart.
And so to me, I can't even, like, fathom the property over people argument. And, like, I mean, mind you, too, I think there, like, there has been, in the all the protesting across the nation, there's been moments where, like, rogue people are coming in and inciting exterior violence against the protests.
Yeah.
And, like,
that's what happened, like, in Spokane. Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, and it's things like that where, like, I think, movements are like, there's always potential for movements to be co-opted and and I think part of that too is, like, we're also really learning to be forgiving of organizers in this time. Like, I don't know how many different iterations of leaders in the Portland community there's got, like, protest leaders, etc., like, relief effort organizers. Like, there's been all these, like, reconciliations of, you know, a group coming up and doing what they can, like, even the Wall of Moms, like, they, like, they do what they can, and then they have, like, a call in or a call out of, over, like, hey, but are there people of color in your core organizers?
Yeah.
And, like, if the answer is no, then, like, then you're not serving this cause. And there's, like, a lot of reconciliation with that. And, like, I think that's part of my always trying to be better informed before I have an action. I really try to do a bunch of research before I'm donating to a specific bail fund or donating to an organization. I try to make sure that I'm putting, like, enough resource, like, seeing if other people I know have donated to the organization, are they being candid with their receipts, and, like, are people who are benefiting from this talking about it also? Like, that's something I try to look for, or more so, like, being very direct with my redistribution of income, like, trying to redistribute it to, like, I don't know. This is, like, the year for GoFundMe. Like, I feel like more than ever, I'm, like, so willing to go to give to, like, to community mutual aid, you know, like, I feel like being in the service industry, I'm already used to, like, having $20 and then tipping someone $20. And then the next time they see me, they give me $20.
Right.
Like, service industry has prepared me for that, where, like, mutual aid at this point truly is, like, sending the same $100 in a circle.
Right.
Which is how it should be, because, like, we as, like, interdependent species, used to live in community where, like, we didn't used to fucking live four people in a house.
Yeah.
You know, the suburban, idea that you don't live with your elders anymore. Like, people used to live with their elders and their grand elders. And, like, I now have, like, the silly, you know, they call it, like, cottage core, dream of like, yeah, I just want to live on like a piece of property with 10 other people and we like farm the land.
Well, it's not that crazy. That might be the way we all have to go here as 2020 gets more wild, and depending on how you know, how many more 5G towers or whatever they put around, whatever's happening. Well, before this goes, we get any deeper on everything, I want to talk to you about your new book. You've got a new book coming out, Fuck Your Darlings, new book by Devin Devine coming soon. Tell us about the book, how it came to be, and where and when people can find it.
Yeah. So, it's kind of crazy. It's been in process for a while. The last time I distributed or published like my poetry was back in 2017, and a lot has happened in my life since then. The collection of work is definitely like 2017 and onward. A lot happened in my personal life in the last few years. I was married and we bought a house, and then I started touring. And myself and my partner at the time, Tony, were both really struggling in sobriety. And I had to make the choice at one point to leave the marriage, and I did. And then I toured for like 9 months. And like the touring was at times really great and super successful. And then at other times, like the most depressed I've been.
Yeah.
And part of it is because like I was quite literally like running away from my feelings. Like I didn't want to have to leave my marriage. I didn't want to have to leave my hometown. I had this like hope that like if I just kept going, eventually I would stop being in pain. And I eventually got so tired of like being without roots. Like I grew up in Spokane. I had never really traveled that much or been without a home grounds, like a bed to sleep in at night. And like, if I'm honest, you know, you do a couple of shows where you have like a bucket pass for $17 in Oklahoma City, and you just are like, nah, I can't do this anymore. Yeah. And then I had a relapse, and kind of sort of realized I needed to stop going. Like I was like, I need to land a place because this is not sustainable.
Yeah.
And I moved to Portland, and so the book of poetry is essentially this like kind of like duality of both like sexuality and sensuality. And I would also say with like grief and healing. The book of poetry also has this photo set in it that I'm really excited to like share with the world. The photos are from probably like January or February 2018. It was like right when I had started doing sex work online initially. And it's this really beautiful nude photo set. And I like still kind of laugh about it to this day because the photographer, like, we did this photo shoot. We had all these talks about like working together and like having like a working relationship where like he would shoot with me and we'd have these photos on my Patreon.
Yeah.
And then after that one photo set, he was like, I can't shoot with you anymore. And I think it's because there was like a disagreement with his spouse. Because I think he maybe didn't like have full permission to be doing nude photos.
Sure.
But it's this really beautiful photo set, and it's like mostly the photos are all in this bathtub in the apartment that Tony and I had lived in at the time. And the wild thing is like 4 or 5 months before this photo set, I had attempted suicide and like had tried to do so. And like the bathtub was part of that moment. And so it's this really interesting thing where like, it's this beautiful photo set of a time that is so far from now. Like so much has happened at this point. And I wanted to include it because I wanted both to like, bodies are supposed are like inherently sexualized when they're naked.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to have this like kind of moment of like, here is like the most naked truths I have. And like in the sense of like leaving love and finding love and falling out of love and the grief of losing love and the grief of loss. And with also this like very naked, like this naked self. And like, they're pretty tasteful. Like I, for the scope of this, like my grandma and my mom know that like, that, like I'm doing this, like I might not give grandma one of the ones that has a nude photo, like the nude
sure.
photos. I might like make one that likes just the palms.
Yeah, could just cut out the pictures after. Yeah.
Just like cut out emojis and glue them on.
Just pictures of you holding a Bible over your. Yeah, so, yeah.
That might be more concerning for her. But it's a pretty cool collection of poems. It's the longest piece of work I will self-publish. It's 60 pages. Like, and in scope, like, I think the last chapbook I put out was like 25.
Yeah.
So it's really a lot more poetry, a lot of work. The crazy thing is like, I just had like, this is a stack of like the, like me editing.
Sure.
Probably like a month ago, a friend and I had sent my working manuscript to my friend, and my friend was like, hey, I don't know how to tell you this, my friend Sabrina, you have two different books here. So we actually split Fuck Your Darlings off into one collection, and then the second collection I'm working on, which there is some crossover with poems, but the second collection I'm working on is much more focused on like recovery and sobriety.
Yeah.
And the Tony and like the loss and grief of that. And so now like that's a working collection. Like I'm working on that manuscript, submitted it. We're working on it. Hopefully. And it's kind of interesting because this book, Fuck Your Darlings, really comes down to like what it means to both like fall in love, like with yourself, sure, but like fall in love willingly and knowing that it can end poorly.
Yeah.
Like I know that might sound pretty fucking dark, but just like the acceptance that like sometimes love doesn't, like there isn't a promise that love is always good.
Right.
You know? Yeah. And like,
that's for sure.
And I think if I'm honest, like that, I've been near tears like three different times looking at a shirt on your wall. And like if I'm honest, like meeting Tony and having Tony be in my life changed the trajectory of my life, and like, and it's something that's so strange to admit, that like he truly is just an impetus for so much. He was a creative impetus for me. He's why I got into stand-up.
Yeah.
Why I decided to like truly double down on self-publishing. Like he and I like did Kiss the Messenger, which is still like, I don't think anyone except for maybe like a couple of people really know how proud he was of those books and like how stoked he was to be like an author of those books.
Yeah.
And like, I have hopes and plans to continue writing them. That's like a whole nother like layer of grief processing. But like my hope is to continue writing them and then actually like have proceeds from the future like printings of Kiss the Messenger go to like some sort of addiction resource specific to Spokane.
Yeah.
Like that's just like a long-term hope. I need some therapy, but I think before I do that, or like some, if I'm honest, like medication.
Sure, maybe like, both.
Yeah, maybe both to keep it stable. I super wish I was in therapy, but I need to get healthcare. And so, yeah, and maybe this book is just because I'm not in therapy.
Yeah, that's a good, writing is cathartic. It's a therapy all its own.
It's a therapy all its own. And like, I don't know, it's... I think I'm growing a lot as a writer in the last few years. I used to definitely, I was so integrated in slam for like slam poetry for a long time. And when I was touring, that was like 90% of what I was doing, right, was performing slams. And now I feel like a lot more of my writing is like, has taken this, like, I just want to write the most honestly I can. Like, that's, and like, sure, I want to write the beautiful thing or like the unique thing, but I've also had to like admit in the creative process that like nothing's fucking unique.
Yeah. Honesty is unique and beautiful. That's the thing.
And like, but like, an idea of like everything has been said and done before. Sure. And like, a friend recently, this is actually something I think I like am so proud of to have had another person like see and witness and then tell me, as I was like at a nude beach with a friend and there was like a couple nearby that had a dog. And like at one point we ended up just like kind of like shout talking about being dog owners, because I had my dog, they had their dog. And my friend was like, Devin, you're so good at like connecting with anybody. And I'm like, yeah, because I have something in common with the 100 people around me. And like, that's something I've really learned in like my recovery process and the program I do for recovery. And like, I think for me, I'm really trying to like learn that the human experience is unifying. Like, we all have experienced very similar things at like group-based levels. And if I can be like the most honest version of myself I can, which is like not wanting to hide parts of me. Like, yeah. I joked, but like my mom and grandma know I'm doing like online,
sure,
sex work.
Yeah.
My grandma will never fully understand what OnlyFans is. But like, I've explained like, hi grandma, so to help pay some bills, I'm selling photos of myself online. You know, like, because I want to tell her and be honest about that, because I would rather everyone in my life, if they are going to know a truth about me, they know it from me.
Sure. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Because, and I don't know, it to me, it erases the idea that shame and guilt can be weaponized. Like, one of the most upsetting things to me about the debates, and mind you, there was so much. But like,
the
amount of shame with Biden's son over his addiction, I am still so livid,
sure,
about it. And like, I mean, like, you know, like, I have strong opinions and very personal experience with like the power that addiction has.
Yeah,
and like,
absolutely.
And the stakes of addiction, which is the loss of life. Like, and that's something to me, like, I'm creeping up on a year sober. I'll be a year sober in November. And like, I really, truly think so much of my sobriety comes back down to like, I know the stakes now. Like, I know that, addiction doesn't go away or change its shape. It just gets crueler and like has, like, there's this phrase of like, your addiction is always doing push-ups. Like, it's just always preparing itself to be stronger, and like, it's adaptive. And like, the guilt and shame of addiction is truly what ends people's life. And like, that's, I think, a huge motivation for me to stay sober. I think it's a huge motivation for me to be like more honest when I'm not doing well. Because I just want to stay here, and I want, and like maybe it's shocking with how much we've talked about the state of the world, but like I want to see it out to the end.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
and the wild thing is like, I believe that today, and like, I can't say that like 2 months ago I believed that. Like, I'm still sober and doing everything I can to be a healthier version of myself. But I also, like, I think I've probably had more suicidal thoughts this year than I have in the past.
Sure. Well, you're probably with a lot of people on that one. I mean, geez.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, like, and this is the thing I keep kind of coming back to is like, and maybe this is like loaded to say, but like Suicide Awareness Month last month and just like people sharing hotlines left and right. It's just like, that's not the answer here, is like sharing a hotline. Like, and I think too, when it comes to like suicide awareness, is like, we don't do enough talks about like people can have access to the resources.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like Tony, someone we both cared and loved for, had access to the resources.
Sure. Yeah.
Had the healthcare, had the access to it, tried it, did it a dozen times over. And yet still it wasn't enough. And so then we have to look at, okay, so what other, greater society systems were in place to fail that person? And it comes down to like, in what ways did, we fail that person, with PTSD and resources around that? In what ways did toxic masculinity inform that person from holding their feelings inside constantly?
Yeah.
And like, I don't know. I think for me, I keep coming back to like, if I can tell the people in my life what's happening in here, like, which is crazy to think that, I could put fully voice or like describe what's going on. not to get like a little like Sylvia Plathy or like yellow wallpaper, but just like, you know, I am grateful that like I can say the things that are going on in my head out loud today and not like immediately end up in like electric shock.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. There's a little more freedom, to, in, you know, ability to say it. And I think it's more accepting. And I like that normalization of, just, this is kind of who I am. This is my fault. This is what makes me feel good. This is what makes me feel bad. And letting people know, and I, you know, yeah, being more honest with you, it helps mental health, being more honest with yourself and then being more honest with others.
Well, and I think it's this, if we can step away and set aside a world in which there is a private self in which you have to keep, like, I just think about like, the amount of, the amount of times people have like kept themselves, like a version of themselves private or closeted or like closed off from the rest of the world. And yeah, like this, and that's because like I'm in the queer community and like so many people, end their lives daily because they feel like they have to, like the version of themselves is unlovable or cannot be fully accepted. And like, the scope at which I hope to like normalize the things I believe and think, about myself, about the world, is truly like my goal at the end of the day is like, if I can say the worst things I have felt or done, then someone else who has felt those things can think, oh, I am not alone in this.
Yeah.
Like, and like, there, I think I can also admit, like, even the worst thing I have done is not the worst thing anyone has done. we like, that's, there are people, yeah, in true, public office who have done, right, far worse things than I have ever even thought of.
Yeah, and they're going to get votes this month or next month. Yeah. So, yeah, that's a great, great outlook, great mantra, and a great tool to use as, in life and in writing in general, and kind of moving forward with everything. So I look forward to, I want to get a copy of this book. Tell us where and when we can find, yeah, it and how.
So for now, through my website, Devin Devine, DevinDevine.me, you can go to the books tab on that and buy it through Big Cartel. I ordered the books. They will be here next week.
Nice.
I'll have physical copies to distribute next week. The thing that I'm doing for the first time, in times of COVID, I also wanted to make this book as more like a new level of accessible. So there's also download copies available.
Okay.
You can buy those and I like email them the PDF to you and you have it. Also because it has nude photos in it, you might not want the physical copy of it. if you have a family or kids or a jealous partner, but that's sad. everybody should be able to enjoy it. But yeah, so there's a download copy available too. And then also my hope is like, once I have the physical copies, is to get them. I really love giant nerd books in Spokane. So my hope is to contact the owner and get them distributed there. So like, hopefully sometime in November, I would be able to have the physical copies available there too. I'm not sure if Annie's, who like normally I distribute my books through, will take it.
Yeah.
I think I have to come up with, like, if I sell it in stores, I think I have to come up with, like,
a sealed packaging or something.
So that, like, the cover isn't nude, but I think I need to come up with, like, a sticker that keeps the book closed and, like, says, like, this book is for 18 over
adult
or whatever.
Content or something, yeah.
Yeah. Because, like, all I know is, like, I'm going to, like, put it in a bookstore and then some, like, 8-year-old's going to open it and, like, I'm dragged online.
That's a good question. I mean, there's got to be stuff like that in bookstores. That's, like, a weird nebulous kind of, like, bookstores have to have.
I have a whole, like, fucking gambit in, like, trying to figure out if I was printing porn. Because, I couldn't find out legally if I was, because there's laws about that. And then I went through a bunch of like websites trying to figure out if people would print my work or not, because it was nude photography and like what the policies over that was. And like, I still feel kind of weird, because like I uploaded all these photos to a website and that website's going to print my book.
Yeah. I just imagine someone Googling like, how to know if you're making porn. You're there's a WikiHow page about
search history is insane.
You're like, oh, this is weird.
It's a lot. Yeah. I don't know. And like, hopefully this book is something I'm able to continue to distribute. I got a grant this year, and that's part of the thing that helped with the initial printing cost.
Great.
Because self-printing is not a cheap expense.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's essentially I'm paying for, you know, a lot out of pocket. But that's part of also why I hope the download copies continue to sell, is because like that download copy, the downloadable copy, A, gets it into people's hands immediately. And then also like I'm not losing at cost.
Yeah, there's no overhead really for that. So, yeah. Well, everyone, go buy the book. Go to devindevine.me. Follow her, find her, purchase the book and the past books. If you don't have Kiss the Messenger already, get both first and second volume of those. Are those available right now? No, not available. Well, yes, no.
That's again one of those like Tony and I sold out of our copies a really long time ago, and I gotta
one day. Okay.
Cost to print those off. But the hope is, once I'm working on book three, my hope is to redistribute books one and two. And as I'm working on book three, have those like ready and selling again. And also, if anyone has any organizations in Spokane that they think would benefit from that, I really would love to like pick an addiction based resource center in Spokane. So people can contact me with that.
Okay.
I would love to help help with that.
All right. And Devin, tell people where they can find you on social media also to follow you.
Yeah, you can find me. I have a Facebook page that's professional, quote, Devin Devine. And then on Instagram and on Twitter, it's Delphine Danger, which it has been for like a decade. Devin Devine was taken, and now it's Delphine Danger, D-E-L-P-H-I-N-E, Danger, on Instagram and Twitter.
All right. Well, everyone, be sure, like I said, to follow, friend, purchase the book, and look for upcoming releases and more. So, all right. Anything else, Devin, before we get out of here?
Yes. Sorry, my dog is also losing it. No, thank you so much, Dees.
Yeah, thank you. It's good to see you. And guys, everyone, as for me, go to Dees Comedy/calendar. There's some live dates happening in other states, not Washington. Be sure to watch the Social Minute, new episodes every Monday on the Social Hour and the YouTube page. All right, for the Social Hour, I have been Dees, and for Devin, thank you very much again. Good to see you.
Thanks, Dees.
All right, everyone, and we will see you next week.